Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of the best podcast that champions Michigan's progressive movement. That's right. It's the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston. As our fantastic podcast voice just told you, we're going to provide a spotlight on the people, the politicians, and the numerous organizations that are fighting to make Michigan's political machine work for both you and I, for all of us. And to make it work for us is to support people and organizations that truly fight for us. For too many years, progressives were afraid to fight. We buckled under pressure from the corporate media, who told us that we must adhere to the corporate conservative wing of this country. I was one of them. I cowered many times during my early radio days out in West Michigan. I was afraid to actually tell everybody what I believed because I was told, you can't do that, Pat. The only way to make it in a radio out here is by being conservative. I mean, they made us feel like the days of FDR's New Deal, of JFK's clarion call to reach beyond what is possible, and that LBJ's Great Society were ideas that once worked, but now we had to give in to corporate greed. We were told those were relics of the past. Now we need tax cuts for the rich. In the meantime, we're going to cut services for you. Maybe that's because corporations started gobbling up media companies. I mean, why do you think true progressive voices weren't, and they still aren't, really represented in corporate media today? I mean, think about it. We had perhaps the worst foreign policy disaster since the Vietnam War when we went through the Iraq War last decade. And yet, despite all the proclamations of Iraq hiding away all kinds of weapons of mass destruction or how America would be welcomed as liberators, the same kind of people who advocated on corporate media to get us into that horrific and destructive war are still getting rewarded with airtime today. They're not punished. They're not banished forever. No, they're still rewarded. Hundreds of thousands of people died. Thousands were injured. And I can't even begin to tell you the number of veterans that we've lost through the years through suicides because they were dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Despite all that happening, the people who advocated for that war still get rewarded with airtime. You know, that's sort of true here with Michigan's political scene. I mean, despite years and years of failure, the conservative agenda still reigns supreme in corporate media. Or, on a more sinister level, rich people have gobbled up media companies, laying off most of the staff so that way they could secretly advance their agenda. My wife calls it re-regulation instead of deregulation, and that's where major companies buy off politicians and use their media access to pressure those politicians to pass laws benefiting them, not us benefiting them. Meanwhile, the rest of us are stuck on the outside, unable to buy influence, unable to gain access, unable to pass laws to help us. And that's how Republicans were able to divide union workers from non-union workers for years, or to divide teachers against police officers, men against women, white against black, gay versus straight, transgender Michiganders wanting to use the bathroom, and rich versus poor or middle class versus poor. They were able to use the power of media and the power of their access in Lansing to divide and conquer. They had us fighting against each other rather than realizing that while we fought against each other, they continued to enrich themselves. That was the name of the game. I mean, that's how they passed bills allowing, let's say, for instance, the Nestle Water Company to pump hundreds of gallons per minute from Osceola County and then allowing them to ship and sell that pristine groundwater out of the state while paying a measly $200 per year to the state of Michigan. Unreal. What a killing. I mean, even when the people spoke out in huge numbers against giving what amounted to a huge handout to Nestle, Former Republican Governor Rick Snyder's Department of Environmental Quality still greenlighted the deal. I'm not kidding. And don't forget that back in 2015, Snyder's then chief of staff, Dennis Muchmore, proposed bringing Nestle's bottled water to Flint during the Flint water crisis for a price. Muchmore's wife, by the way, worked as a consultant for Nestle. So not only were Flint residents dealing with the crisis that Rick Snyder and his emergency managers created, but some in his administration thought, hey, you know what? Maybe we can make a buck off this crisis that, hey, we've created. And you know what? Maybe they thought it would work because things like that have worked in the past. So sure, we'd pay for it while Nestle collected. Talk about a revolving door of corruption. Speaking of Nestle, it's been providing bottled water for Flint residents during the past year, but it now says that it's stopping its bottled water donations by the end of this month, by the end of April. Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who's having to deal with this crisis, is now promising Flint residents that they will still have access to bottled water one way or another. Huh, go figure. Another Democrat having to fix the mess a Republican administration left for them. I wonder if that's ever happened before. Enjoy Michigan's water, Nestle, and enjoy getting to ship it out of the state of Michigan for the grand total price of 200 bones. Wow. Talk about being tone deaf. Oh, and speaking of the Flint water crisis, good news here. A district judge reversed his original decision last year and has decided to name Rick Snyder as a defendant in a class action lawsuit by Flint residents. It was Snyder's emergency managers, if you recall, that ordered residents to switch to the cheaper, more toxic Flint River water. It was Snyder's emergency managers who ignored residents' concerns that there was something wrong with the water. It was Snyder's environmental officials who refused to order corrosion control of the pipes, which eventually leaked lead into the drinking water. And it was Snyder's administration that didn't do anything for months while Flint children drank that poisoned water. I'm still waiting for Right to Life groups to be outraged over that fact. And remember, it was Snyder who ran for governor on a platform that he could run the state like a competent CEO. And yet, it was Snyder who wanted Michiganders to believe that there's no way that he knew any of these things were happening. It was all happening around behind his back. It was just bad luck for Rick. He wasn't there that day. He was sick, apparently. Well, thankfully, in the judge's order, he wrote this, and I will read it. He says, the governor acted indifferently to the risk of harm they faced, they being the Flint residents, demonstrating a callous disregard for their right to bodily integrity. This indifference manifested itself in two ways. Initially, the governor was indifferent because instead of mitigating the risk of harm caused by the contaminated water, he covered it up. In private, he worried about the need to return Flint to the Detroit water system and the political implications of the crisis. But in public, he denied all knowledge, despite being aware of the developing crisis. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Rick Snyder's legacy. And that's the Republican legacy here in the state of Michigan. And despite everything that happened in the Flint water crisis, Snyder and his Republican Party still had one more last hurrah during last year's lame duck session. Knowing how Gretchen Whitmer trounced Republican Attorney General Bill Schuette in the gubernatorial election, knowing how Democratic women swept statewide races for Attorney General, Secretary of State, and the U.S. Senate, not to mention the many Democratic women who won state Senate and House races, Snyder and his Republicans decided to make one last crescendo when it came to Michigan's water resources. They decided to rush through a bill to build a tunnel around the Line 5 oil pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac. I mean, the bill would allow the Canadian oil company named Enbridge, you remember that name? Well, that allows Enbridge to build a new pipeline under 100 feet of bedrock, costing Enbridge around $300 to $500 million to complete. They will pay for the cost. This project will take around a decade to complete. That means oil will still be pumping through those two 65-year-old Line 5 pipelines from the UP to Sarnia, Ontario. The pipeline is old and unreliable, so unreliable that Enbridge misled federal officials about the pipeline's conditions for 3 years. And that was a huge story when that broke a few years ago. I mean, Enbridge hid the fact that the pipeline's protective coating was damaged, and yet it said nothing for years. So naturally, we reward them. Here, build a new pipeline. What could go wrong? Well, thankfully, we have a progressive governor and attorney general who aren't playing when it comes to the health of our Great Lakes. Again, they won big last fall for a number of reasons, and one of them was their staunch opposition to this new tunnel. Last week, Attorney General Dana Nessel ruled the law unconstitutional, and Governor Whitmer followed her advice and ordered all work on the pipeline to stop. Now, what happens next isn't exactly known, but judging from the Michigan Republican outrage, a fight is afoot. Wow, imagine that. Republicans backing big oil over our Great Lakes. Go figure. Coming up, Sean McBrearty from the Michigan Clean Water Action, who's against this pipeline, will be joining me here on the Left of Lansing podcast. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and to hear the weekly podcast. Oh, hey, wait, one more note. Remember how I was saying that rich corporations buy media companies to hide what's really happening behind the scenes? A former Flint Journal reporter, his name is Gary Ridley, tweeted the following this week. In the midst of the Flint water crisis, Advance Publications, which owns the Plain Dealer and Flint Journal, cut the Flint reporting staff nearly in half. Today, there are only three reporters with one job posted working in the Flint office covering a population of about 500,000 people. Wow. We are in the middle of a huge fight, everyone. The one side has the money. The one side has the access. But we've got the numbers. And we've got each other. And we've got the Left of Lansing podcast to help you know exactly what's happening here in Michigan. As I always tell you at the close of each and every podcast, remember to always take the battle to them. That is how we can win in the end. Take the battle to them.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Rumor has it, if you want to get Pat really fired up, just tell him Ringo Starr is just an average drummer. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Now, back to Pat.
Welcome back to the Left of Lansing podcast. Remember, you can always visit us online at leftoflansing.com. And I am also on Twitter. That's at Left of Lansing. That's simple. All right, as I promised, joining me right now is Sean McBrearty. He is the campaign organizer for the Clean Water Action here in the state of Michigan. Sean, thank you very much for being on the Left of Lansing podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, Pat. Excited to talk about some of our issues today.
Well, you know, that's what I was going to say. You know, I've got you this week, and I thought that we would probably have a struggle talking about some water issues because there really isn't much out there happening, is there?
Well, you know, to quote an old poet, water, water everywhere and not enough to drink.
That's right. Well, just before I got you on here, I highlighted how protecting Michigan's water seems to be a goal that Republicans simply have a hard time accomplishing. The Flint water crisis alone shined the spotlight on that true fact. But Sean, despite everything that happened in Flint, the Snyder administration and his Republicans said, hold my beer, as they rushed through a bill during last year's lame duck session allowing Canadian energy company Enbridge to build a tunnel for the Line 5 oil pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac. For some of our listeners, Sean, who may not be aware of exactly what the Line 5 pipeline is all about, can you exactly tell us what this pipeline does?
Yeah, absolutely. So Line 5 is a 65-year-old Canadian oil and gas pipeline that functions essentially as a shortcut for Canadian oil to make it from Superior, Wisconsin, down to Sarnia, Ontario, going straight through the Upper Peninsula, across by US 2, and then down through the five-mile stretch across the Straits of Mackinac, across the Lower Peninsula, and over to Sarnia. So the pipeline, you know, has been functioning since 1953. Its initial lifespan was expected to be 50 years. But, you know, despite that, the pipeline is still functioning now 65 years later. It's actually older than Line 6B was when it burst in the Kalamazoo River, spilling 1.2 million gallons into the river.
Wow. Okay, so this is already 15 years past its expected lifespan.
Yes.
How does Michigan benefit from the Line 5 pipeline?
So the argument that Enbridge Energy likes to use is that they provide a significant portion of the propane that gets used in the Upper Peninsula. And so while they provide some propane to the Upper Peninsula, there are other providers out there. There was a study done last year by London Economics International that showed that if the Line 5 pipeline were to shut down tomorrow, either because of a rupture or because our state comes to its senses and shuts down this pipeline, the cost difference in the Upper Peninsula would be a 5 cent per gallon increase on propane.
Just 5 cents?
Yes, just 5 cents a gallon, which is well within market fluctuations. We're really excited about the fact that when Governor Whitmer requested the Michigan Public Service Commission to look into critical energy infrastructure in Michigan, part of that is going to be the Public Service Commission looking at propane in the Upper Peninsula and developing backup plans, because really having a pipeline that's 15 years past its intended lifespan and has a whole lot of malfunctions, including new bends in the pipeline, coating defects, signs of rust and corrosion through the straits portion, having that as your primary plan for providing propane source to the Upper Peninsula is really risky on its face, even if we don't talk about the impending disaster of an oil spill in the heart of the Great Lakes.
Sean, basically, we're just sort of in the middle as this Canadian oil is being transferred from one part of Canada to the other?
Yes, the Line 5 pipeline starts in Superior, Wisconsin, where the Alberta Clipper carries tar sands oil down from Alberta to Superior. It's processed into light crude at Superior, and then light crude goes through Line 5 from Superior, Wisconsin, down to Sarnia, Ontario. Now, a majority of the time the pipeline runs light crude, about 2 to 3 days out of a month, the pipeline runs natural gas liquids. And that is what is part of it is offloaded. About 2% of the natural gas liquids are offloaded in Rapid River, Michigan, and processed into propane for the Upper Peninsula.
You also mentioned the oil spill in the Kalamazoo River. I mean, that's the same Enbridge, right, that was responsible for that oil spill?
Exactly. It's the same company. They still have many of the same operational discipline issues, control room issues, and lack of a pipeline spill emergency response plan that, you know, resulted in the catastrophic damage done to the Kalamazoo River.
We're talking with Sean McBrady from Clean Water Action here on the Left of Lansing podcast. All right, Sean, so Gretchen Whitmer wins the gubernatorial race last fall, and Dana Nessel wins the race for state attorney general. And knowing that they ran against a proposed tunnel, what did Rick Snyder and his Republicans do during last year's lame duck session to block Whitmer and Nessel from keeping their campaign promise?
It's been funny is probably not the right word for it, but in the last few days, it's been interesting, at least, seeing the coverage from key state House and state Senate Republicans talking about how this was a deliberative and well-thought-out process, because the bill, Senate Bill 1197, which became Public Act 359 and dealt with Line 5 in the Straits, was actually introduced on November 8th, so 2 days after the election for those keeping score. It was the first day of lame duck was November 27th. On November 28th, they held one committee hearing in the Senate, then moved it out of committee. At that point, the bill was supposed to give the Mackinac Bridge Authority control over building an oil tunnel for Enbridge through the Straits of Mackinac. The reason they chose the Mackinac Bridge Authority was because the Bridge Authority has very broad powers, including the power of eminent domain, the ability to use state bonding, and the ability to circumvent any review by other state departments. So no environmental review or alternatives analysis of an Enbridge oil tunnel. So during lame duck, members of the Mackinac Bridge Authority, as well as Clean Water Action members and broader coalition that we work with called Oil and Water Don't Mix, got together and had a lobby day on the first day of lame duck. And we were able to raise the profile of this issue enough so that some of the Republican members got a little bit gun shy. They wound up changing the law to remove the Mackinac Bridge Authority as much as possible and create this Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority. Nobody knew about a Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority until after their initial version, which passed committee on November 28th, was getting some pushback from legislative Republicans. And then they created this Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority in the act that authorizes the Mackinac Bridge Authority.
Sean, who sits on this Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority?
Great question. There are three members who were appointed to the Straits Corridor Authority about December 11th when Governor Snyder signed this law, so about 2 weeks after the first committee hearing in the first chamber. Within a week of Snyder appointing these three, two of them had resigned. And, you know, he appointed them to 6-year terms, which is illegal under the state constitution. You're not allowed to have terms longer than 4 years. Another really insidious part of this bill was that they knew this would not be something that the next administration would support. So they wrote into this legislation that if the Attorney General of Michigan wishes to challenge the constitutionality of this law, the Attorney General would also be responsible for paying for the defense of the law.
Unreal.
Yeah, really strange lawmaking being done here. They, you know, people pointed out the constitutional flaws from day one in this closed door through the dead of night process, which, you know, to see them characterize this as open, deliberative, and we've talked about it for a long time, is just beyond the pale. But so Mike Nystrom, the chair of the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority, well, former chair, because it doesn't exist anymore, you know, admitted earlier this week that due to the Attorney General's opinion and Governor Whitmer's executive directive issued shortly afterwards to halt all state agency permitting around the Line 5 tunnel, the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority no longer exists.
The way you were describing the process, it sounds like it was completely chaotic during the lame duck session and not at all as smooth as some of the Republicans, especially State Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirky, wants to make it sound like, how it all went down.
Oh, absolutely. And I tracked this thing from day one, and the first time that I was able to see the version that wound up passing the state Senate was the day that they passed it on the floor. They kept this hidden and in the dark until the very last minute.
Sean, it's almost like they knew this would anger many people. Shocking.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Just goes to show you, I guess, money in politics sometimes does play a key role. By the way, we're talking with Sean McBrady from Clean Water Action here on the Left of Lansing podcast. Okay, so you brought it up that Attorney General Nestle did keep with her promise and did find a way to temporarily halt the tunnel's construction by saying the lame duck law was unconstitutional. And of course, then Gretchen Whitmer followed with an executive order to halt any type of construction. Do you believe that they are standing on firm ground here in their argument that the law is unconstitutional?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the Attorney General is really a brilliant lawyer. I think that's a big part of the reason why the people of Michigan chose her to represent us. And it's kind of funny to see legal challenges coming from Majority Leader Shirky and Speaker Chatfield, who are, of course, both not lawyers. So to see them opine on the decision of really a fearless and relentless lawyer who has had a career both as a prosecutor and on the other side of the table and has been in the legal community for a long time, done a lot of good work, to see them try to challenge her opinion on a legal basis is kind of funny.
Could you just go through real quickly what were a couple of the ways that Dana Nestle found this law to be unconstitutional?
So the primary thing that she found was that it violates title object. So according to the Michigan Constitution, there's a fairly common sense provision that any law, the title of the law has to match what it actually does. The title of this law, the law that they took to amend to create this deal was the same act that authorized the Mackinac Bridge Authority back in 1952. So they tried to amend it to also create the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority separately under the same bill, and then to allow the Corridor Authority to do all sorts of things as far as make contracts on behalf of the state and things like that that were not detailed within the title of the legislation. And, you know, the reason behind this title object provision is really to ensure that both lawmakers and the general public know what is being passed so that you can't sneak things in at the last minute. But the title object violation in what is now Public Act 359 is pretty clear. And the Attorney General, did a great job of outlining that in her opinion, which for those who would like to read it is available on her website. It's only 24 pages long, which is for legal documents, pretty short and to the point.
That is true. Joining me is Sean McBrarity. He's with Clean Water Action, and we're talking here on the Left of Lansing podcast. I was reading through an article on the Detroit Free Press, and they were talking about, you know, what happens next now after Governor Whitmer's executive order. And one thing that's been brought up by some of your allies, I would say, Sean, is that perhaps they could consider revoking the easement, that could maybe be the best course of action in a way that Whitmer could argue, I suppose, that Enbridge has violated the easement by ignoring erosion problems in the past and many of the problems that you brought up at the beginning of this interview. Is that an option?
Yeah, that's definitely an option. That's something that Clean Water Action, the Oil and Water Don't Mix campaign, and our allies are encouraging the governor and attorney general to move forward with, is to revoke the easement that allows Enbridge to continue operating Line 5. There are several different categories of violations to this easement. And, you know, there's also one distressing fact about this. So with the screw anchor supports that Enbridge is currently using in the Straits of Mackinac, there are these screw anchors that they started adding to the pipeline in the early 2000s. Now, what they do is essentially change the design of a pipeline that was intended to sit on the bottom lands of the Great Lakes into a pipeline that is suspended a few feet from the bottom of the lake bed by these screw anchors. There's evidence that these anchors have caused more damage to the pipeline than they've helped. For instance, a lot of the coating defects on the pipeline have been caused by these screw anchors. And no engineering analysis was ever required for what they've essentially done now, which is to turn 3 miles through the straits into an elevated pipeline instead of something that sits on the bottomlands. There's actually a contested case before the Department of Environmental Quality right now where some of the tribes of northern Michigan, as well as the Mackinac Straits Alliance, which is a citizens group, and the village of Mackinac Island are contesting the DEQ's permitting of these anchor points and saying that, you know, they really have to look at this within the context of the Great Lakes Submerged Lands Act and bring the permitting process around this pipeline under the rule of law, which is actually another route that could result in this pipeline being decommissioned.
And Sean, did I read correctly that a federal judge, I think it was it last Friday, last week, said that federal agencies have to improve their response plan for any kind of oil spill that could maybe happen with Line 5?
Yes. So, yeah, there's a federal judge ruling on Friday in a case that the National Wildlife Federation brought that there is no sufficient oil spill response plan for Line 5 in the Straits of Mackinac, which we've been calling attention to that for a long time. A big piece of evidence around the fact that there's not a sufficient oil spill response plan and they're not ready for an oil spill response in the Straits is when an anchor struck Line 5, which is actually a year and 2 days ago on April 1st of 2018. So an anchor struck Line 5, left 3 big gouges in the pipeline, and also cut through some electronic transmission cables. Now, Enbridge wasn't even able to get eyes on the pipeline until 2.5 weeks later. They had to bring a remotely operated vehicle up from Florida and then deploy it in the Straits of Mackinac to get the first images of the gashes in their pipeline. It seems pretty common sense that something like that should be on site, not something that you bring up from across the country.
Right. Oh, okay. So it makes sense why everybody thinks that we should just, at least those who are backing this tunnel, thinks that we should just trust Enbridge completely. What could go wrong?
Yeah. Another piece about this tunnel plan, if a tunnel were to ever exist, which there's still a good argument to be made, I think, that even if this law had held up and was still in effect, that Enbridge didn't really have the intention of building a tunnel through the straits. They just want to keep this aging pipeline that they profit off of so much functioning for the next 10 years.
Right.
Leaving the straits at risk for the next 10 years with this ticking time bomb in the heart of the Great Lakes is really irresponsible. We need leadership that's going to move much quicker than that to decommission this pipeline.
So what's next here, Sean? I mean, going to the courts? Is Enbridge going to sue? Will the state sue itself? I mean, what's going to happen here in your prediction?
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't have a crystal ball. However, I wouldn't be surprised to see Enbridge, you know, as one of the wealthiest, largest companies in the world. Aside from running their giant pipeline network across North America, they're also the majority shareholder in Energy Transfer Partners, running the Dakota Access Pipeline. They love to throw their heft around and try to bully states into doing what they want. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Enbridge continue to spend their money influencing our lawmakers. They're again a major sponsor of like the Mackinac Policy Conference that the Chamber of Commerce holds on Mackinac Island each year. I can't speak for them, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to sue the state for finally being responsible and protecting our water.
You mentioned how they had some interest with the Dakota Access Pipeline. That's the same pipeline that many people were protesting against and eventually did spill or at least have an accident, didn't it?
Yes, there have been a couple spills in the Dakota Access Pipeline so far, and it's not even entirely built yet.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, Sean McBrady from Clean Water Action. I've taken up a lot of your time, but I was wondering if I could just ask you one more question since I have you here. Could you quickly comment on a bill that Democratic State Representative Lori Puhutsky, a friend of Left of Lansing, by the way, she introduced it a few weeks ago, and I believe you were there at the introduction. It would repeal another lame duck law that prevents Michigan from passing environmental protections that would be stronger than federal law. Would you care to talk about that, please?
Oh, absolutely. And so we were very glad that Representative Puhutsky, got elected. It's wonderful to have a brilliant young scientist in the Michigan legislature. And B, that she chose to introduce this law to repeal No Stricter Than Federal, because Michigan, is really in a unique position, surrounded by 21% of the world's fresh water. And we can't rely on federal minimums to protect the Great Lakes and our water-based ecosystem here in Michigan. Those laws are just not sufficient. They're meant to be floors, not ceilings for states. So we're very glad that Representative Puhutsky introduced a repeal of No Stricter Than Federal, and we're encouraging state House reps and state senators to support Representative Puhutsky's bill and to hold committee hearings so that the people of Michigan and people who actually know what's involved with something like No Stricter Than Federal can be heard by our legislature.
I think she's doing a wonderful job, and she's only been there for a couple of months. Sean McBrady with Clean Water Action. If people would like to learn more about Clean Water Action, where can they find you?
Thank you. Yeah, they can find us at cleanwateraction.org/MI. I'd like to just recommend to people, we have the Great Lakes Awards celebration coming up this year on Tuesday, April 16th at Allen Marketplace in the Allen Neighborhood Center in Lansing. Representative Yusuf Rabi is getting our Lawmaker of the Year award. Attorney General Nessel is giving a keynote speech, and I'd like to invite everyone to come out and join us for that event. You can find more about that and tickets as well at cleanwateraction.org/MI.
All right, sweet. Well, thanks again, Sean, for being on the podcast. Wish you and everybody at Clean Water Action luck. And remember, we've got your back here at Left of Lansing, and I'll make sure to link to your website at leftoflansing.com.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Pat. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. Upset with something you've heard? Did Pat say something you think is ignorant, stupid, or arrogant? Or do you actually agree with something Pat said on the podcast? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Special thanks again to Sean Brady from Clean Water Action for being on the podcast. I've also put a link to the Clean Water Action website on the post along with this podcast on leftoflansing.com. I'm also on Twitter. Don't forget about that. It's at Left of Lansing. And I'm also on the Facebook. Just type in Left of Lansing to find me. And as always, I'd love to get your feedback on the podcast. My email is leftoflansing@gmail.com. Again, that's leftoflansing@gmail.com. While Sean and I were having our discussion about Line 5, a little more news on this issue surfaced, and it's a story that, frankly, doesn't surprise me. Republican State House Speaker Lee Chatfield from Levering gave an interview on the ultra-right-wing Frank Beckman show on WJR. Chatfield criticized Attorney General Nessel for ruling that their outrageous piece of legislation to build that tunnel for a new oil and gas pipeline was unconstitutional, and he also criticized Governor Whitmer for accepting Nessel's ruling and ordering for work on that tunnel to stop. Now, Chatfield is of the opinion that the pipeline is needed, and that's fine. That's fine. We can debate the merits of his arguments. I'm always about debating the issues. That's fine. But Chatfield could not let it go there. Oh, no. Chatfield told Frank Beckman that we shouldn't make decisions without a fallback plan, and that we should use sound science when making decisions about the Great Lakes, and that we cannot make those decisions based, and this is a quote, purely by emotions. Well, there you have it, everybody. There you have it, right from House Speaker Lee Chatfield's mouth. You see, according to Chatfield, there's no way the science is on Whitmer and Nessel's side. No, you see, they're women, and they can only lead by emotions, because women are emotional. Not men, just women. Would you expect anything different from today's Republican Party, I ask you? And they wonder why they're struggling to get women voters to pick their party over Democrats. Hey, yep, the science, Mr. Chatfield, is on our side. That's right. Your party is the one that's against science. Your party's leader keeps proposing major cuts to the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. Oh, I know. Donald Trump has now reversed that decision out of his sudden appreciation for the Great Lakes' deepness. Your party's leader just announced that wind farms cause cancer! What?! Where is the science backing that asinine statement, Representative Chatfield? Unbelievable! Your party's last governor didn't lift a finger for months after the science showed Flint water was harming people. Your party passed the No Stronger Than Federal bill that prevents Michigan from taking stronger measures to protect the environment, which, you know, essentially protects us, especially at a time when PFAS are being discovered across the state. Where, and I ask again, where is the science backing that bill, Representative Chatfield? The science is not on your side, and neither are the facts, by the way. Governor Whitmer hasn't shut down Line 5. She only halted construction on this tunnel. Now, I hope she will eventually shut it down, and there are millions of others that hope that she'll do the same thing as well. But it appears that Governor Whitmer is waiting for a backup plan to ensure residents in the UP get their propane, that they won't be left having to pay higher prices. She's actually taking a more pragmatic approach. You can debate that approach, but she's not rushing through any kind of decision to shut down the pipeline. She's being pragmatic, which then I suppose would mean it's you, Mr. Chatfield. You are the one who's acting emotional. Why are you so emotional, Representative Chatfield? Why?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
All right, I'm getting a headache. I need to end this podcast right now. Remember, you can email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. The podcast is always available at leftoflansing.com, plus other news and information and some songs that I share from time to time. I need a little break. We'll do this again next week. Go Tigers! You've been listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.